Welcome to Drunk Guys Book Club, where books aren't just for school, where book clubs aren't just for women, and beer is our imperial affliction.
I'm Mike.
I'm Nate.
And we are the Drunk Guys.
And this week we are reading The Fault in Our Stars by John Green.
Yeah, John Green's 2012 young adult novel, one of many. He's super successful writer, just came out with a new book that we haven't read yet, of course, because it's new. But before we could talk much more about the book, I'm going to need a beer.
Definitely.
And the book deals with young children with cancer.
Mm-hmm.
I need a beer to handle that.
Yep.
We chose as our theme this week, imperial beers. And we're gonna work our way down, I think.
Mm-hmm.
This is a beer I happen to have on tap here at Roseanne Bar. This is Dogfish Head Worldwide Stout, which is in the upper teens in alcohol.
Okay, I know this is weird. It smells like soy sauce.
I know just to describe.
Okay, I'm not imagining.
Oh yeah, and that's a real thing. A lot of bigger stouts have that kind of flavor.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's an intense brew.
This is only 1% less than the mead we had.
It's hard to tell. The strength varies between 15 and close to 20% each year. So it doesn't actually say. So I'm just going to assume it's in the middle. I'll just say 17.5, 18%. And I could tell you from some of the horrendous hangovers I've had, it must be close to that, because there have been days when I had two of these. Now I've had two, 12-ounce pours, and I really regretted it. So I've had this keg for a while. Probably it's longer than you'd want to hold on to a keg. But if I drank it any faster, I'd be dead. I'm also a cheap fucker, and I don't want to just give it to people. So I'll usually pretend it's not there when people come by.
Except for me.
You get the VIP treatment here at Roseanne Bar. So this is the Dogfish Head. We've had some of their beers in the past. And this is a beer that they started making in the 90s in a sort of, as far as I understand, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, Dogfish Head, by tweeting us at DrunkGuysBC, in a sort of alcohol arms race they were having with Sam Adams. So basically up until about like 1994, the strongest beer in the world was this sort of obscure beer that we will drink soon when we do our Christmas Carol episode, called Sammy Klaus, which is 14% alcohol. 14% alcohol today, that's a big beer. That was the strongest beer in the world for years. And many people kind of wondered, like, could you get something stronger than this with just yeast, right? Because the things that you drink that are stronger, your liquors, those are not just fermented, they are then distilled, where you're concentrated. So just with yeast, how strong could a beer get? Well, Sam Adams came out with a beer that was like 14 or 15% alcohol called Triple Bock, which I've actually had. Now, I had a bottle that was at the time 10 years old, so it might not have been stored well, but that tasted like pure soy sauce. It was disgusting. That came out in the mid-90s, and then Dogfish Head comes out with some other things, and one of the products was Worldwide Stout, which I think they got a 20% alcohol version of this out. And Sam Adams eventually wins that race with their beer Utopias, which was like the most recent version of it, I think, was 29% alcohol, and that's without distilling. That's just with adding, special sugars and very, very particular yeast strain that they've kind of cultivated to handle this stress of high alcohol. Because basically, yeast will produce alcohol as long as there's sugar, but the alcohol will kill the yeast, as it will do to your liver. So there's some sort of top. I know BrewDog made a beer that was 28% alcohol, which was the strongest beer for a little while.
Is that the one with the squirrel?
No, that's a different one. They use a trick. They made a beer called Ghost Deer, and they sold it in like 10 centiliter bottles, like tiny little things. Never had that. That's really rare and hard to get, I guess. The one in the squirrel, we'll see about that in the future.
Okay.
We're going to try to get that one day. But this beer was at one point one of the strongest beers in the world. The way they do it, as far as I understand, they make a big stout with a monster yeast strain, and they keep adding very, very simple sugars to it, like dextrose, stuff that the yeast can easily digest, and that will continue to make more alcohol. Yay. And because it's not malted barley and everything gets fermented, you get a beer that's higher alcohol and of a thinner body. Like, this doesn't really have a super chewy, thick flavor that you might expect for such a strong beer. Right?
It's really strong, but
it's strong in alcohol and flavor, but it's not cloying on your
tongue.
It's
not twice as strong as even a regular IPA.
Because
that's a lot. It's not twice as strong, but it's definitely strong.
Right. Well, this is, it sneaks up on you, or it has on me. And it is an imperial stout. And we chose imperial because we're part of the plot of The Fault in Our Stars.
So, okay, The Fault in Our Stars is a really, really sad book about kids who have cancer, kids who have cancer and who are going to die from cancer. And there is a lot of stuff that goes on, but here's why it connects to the book. It's because the main character, or this girl, whose name is Hazel, her favorite book in the world is this book called An Imperial Affliction. And the book in the book, this is almost like Hamlet. So it's the book within the book. It's very meta. The book within the book is about a child with cancer. And she is a child with cancer, and she just absolutely loves this book, and a bunch of things happen in the book because of the book An Imperial Affliction. If this is getting confusing, I can understand.
Doing it drunk.
Imagine trying to explain this after a couple beers. Because the book within the book is called An Imperial Affliction, we decided to have all Imperial beers so that our hangovers tomorrow can be a real Imperial Affliction.
And since we have chosen, we normally do 2 or 3 beers an episode, we have 4.
4 beers. And we're starting with the one that's like 4 beers in a tiny little cup.
Yeah, we had the luxury of not having to drink a whole bottle, though. Mm-hmm. I have a couple of bottles of this in the cellar for other times in the future, perhaps, or just days when I
hate yourself.
Yeah, those days never stop. And so the Imperial Affliction, the book thing, it's complicated-ish, right? There's an angsty kind of teen elements to the book, right? They're teenagers.
A little bit.
Who have reason to be moody and weird. And teenagers get into shit really strongly. If they like a band, then they don't just like that band. They fucking worship that band. Mm-hmm. If they like a book, they don't just read it once and be like, oh, I like that book. They read it over and over again. And that's what happens with Hazel. She's obsessed with this book. And of course, the book ends dissatisfyingly. It has a sort of cliffhanger, non-complete ending.
Because the main character of the book, dies. So nobody finds out what happens to the other characters after the book.
It's like almost, the mother, I think, was
the mother and Sisyphus the hamster and all these other things. They don't find out what happens in the book because the narrator of the book dies. And that bothers Hazel very much. She definitely wants to know what happens in the rest of the book, which is part of the plot.
Yes, of the book.
The book within the book.
Oh, the book. Not within the book.
The book. Wait, which book are we talking about?
We just started. Yeah, so Hazel meets Augustus, who, aside from being the emperor of the book, is another another high school student with cancer. Though his cancer appears to be in remission, while hers is actually kind of getting worse.
So Hazel has some form of lung cancer. There's a complicated like cancer name. I don't remember what it is, but she has lung cancer. She has a hard time breathing. She has a oxygen tank with her at all times, and the little things in her nose. The whole way through. And Augustus, who has cancer, he has half of his leg removed already in order to, like, fight the cancer. And it looks like, at the beginning of the book at least, that's, you know, he's beat it. He's gonna live, whereas she is going to die.
Foreshadowing, spoiler, things might not happen that way.
Yeah, exactly. But
don't worry,
anyway,
we'll spoil it formally for you.
And they're both, like, 16 years old, 15, 16, 17 years old.
So they're at that age where everything is hyper-emotional and You can't just have a regular reaction to it. And they are feeling the ticking of the clock much more strongly than the average 16-year-old. Everything's amplified in their world.
And they have these incredibly complicated emotions about, well, I'm dying of cancer. What's going to happen to my parents when I die? And what am I going to do with, what's going to happen to the other people around me when I die? And the book is so sad. It was even more sad the second time when I read it this week for the podcast. Now that I know what happens.
Can I just say, I should say it now before, if I drink 3 more beers and try to talk about this, I'll be a maudlin mess. I am not a parent, but I think I'm fairly empathetic. There's a scene where Hazel overhears her parents, not arguing, but like trying to console each other, essentially. Yeah. And something the mom says that like broke my heart. And I make jokes about just taking dumps and jerking off all the time. Like, you would think I am incapable of such an emotion. However, there's a part where the mom, like, Hazel's an only child, and Hazel's not doing well, and the mom says to the dad, you know, if Hazel dies, will I not be a mom anymore?
I'm not going to be a mom anymore.
That is just, I mean,
like, holy shit.
I've never thought of that like that. You know, you are aware as a person living in this, you know, in the world that children die, tragically or unexpectedly or whatever, but that sort of conversation, unless that happened to your family or someone you know, I never considered. You know, I never really thought about it. Man, I remember I was reading on the train, and I remember kind of tearing up a little bit. Mm-hmm. Man, I need a beer. That's terrible. That is not cool.
So, I listened to, so just this past week, I listened to the audiobook version, and there's a little interview with John Green, the author, at the very end, and John Green talks about why he wrote the book, and because when he was really young, he had a job where he worked with kids with cancer, and that's what led him to basically imagine this book and why he wrote it. But it's really fucking sad. But he wrote it partly based on his actual experience of actually working with teenagers with cancer.
And clearly he had done a lot of research. I mean, he knew a shitload about cancer and support groups.
In Amsterdam.
Yeah. In the beginning, you know, you're reading about them going to the support groups, and it seems like a YA version of Fight Club. Going to the...
So, I really liked Fight Club, but... I reread it this week. A really brilliant way to do the exposition of this book. You know, the very first scene of this book is Hazel at support group, the cancer support group, and that's where she gets to explain, well, who I am and who the other people who are going to be in the book are, because they're all talking about their own experience at book club. It was just a great way.
Support club.
Support club.
We're in the book club.
Support club, exactly. And you were too, did I just say listener. Book club?
You did. That's okay.
Let's cut that. I feel it.
Leave that in there. That's great.
Because that's support group. And, you know, it's a great way to introduce all the characters. Because there's one thing about a book is the author has to talk about who the people are to introduce the world. This was a great way to do it.
Right, you get a ton of data, and it doesn't feel didactic. Right? It's just like...
It feels natural.
Yeah, it's a clever way to do it. I mean, there's a lot of technical shit that just kind of goes out, and you're like, you just kind of accept it as part of the story,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, you're bummed out, but that happens.
I think we need another beer before we get too bummed out.
Take a pick a number, man. We have three more Imperial beverages.
I don't know anything about any of the others, but I'm interested in,
you know, it's good you picked this now, because I don't think I could pronounce it now. I certainly won't be able to pronounce it later. This is a Stone beverage. It starts with an X. Is it like a Zo? A Z? Zokovez?
If there's an X at the beginning?
That's a fucking X, right? That's an X. Zokoveza?
Zokoveza.
Shokoveza.
I'm speak no Mexican, but...
Jesus. Mexican.
Tell us about this beer.
So we had to pick Imperial beers, and I went to the store, and I said to the dude, what has the word Imperial in it? And before I could say the sentence, he was... stocking the shelf, and this was on the shelf. Like, this is destiny. We must drink one of these. This is an imperial stout inspired by Mexican hot chocolate. So it means it came here illegally, but it's as a stout brewed with cocoa, coffee, peppers, vanilla, cinnamon, and nutmeg. So interesting, because we've recently had some stuff with a lot of those flavors. You know, the nutmeg, the cinnamon, the vanilla.
Is that the Warlock?
The Warlock, yeah. Remember that? Yeah. That tasted like a Warlock teabagged us. This, you know, no offense, Southern Tier. Stone makes plenty of things that I don't think are fantastic, but I don't think they've made anything ever that I thought was shitty. So I'm excited. I think this will be nice. And you smell it. You certainly smell coffee. That's what I smell most of all. Oh, and you taste the pepper and the coffee for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And the alcohol, very well hidden here. It's an 8.1%. So we've now, by about half, cut our alcohol intake. So this is practically... you know, O'Doul's compared to what we just drank.
Is it possible this has too many things in it?
Yeah, it's a little I can't detect everything. I get coffee.
It cancels itself out.
There's a lot going on. And not that I'm going to blame dog's head.
Mexican chocolate? That's what you said, right?
Inspired by Mexican hot chocolate.
Hot chocolate. This cold beer does not remind me of Mexican. Any hot chocolate. I don't know what Mexican hot chocolate is, but...
It's like a hot chocolate that hangs outside of a Home Depot looking for work.
Okay, we gotta cut
that one out. It's like a hot chocolate that really wishes Daka was still around. It's like a hot chocolate that wears a luchador mask. I'll let you edit this part. You can pick which one you want. I think I made you cry a little. That's awesome.
A little bit.
Is it the Home Depot?
Laugh too hard. Okay. Ooh, okay.
All right. So I really don't know what Mexican hot chocolate is. Clearly. But I guess it's got fucking peppers in it and spices. There's just too much shit here. There's too much stuff.
It's just a lot of things.
I mean, you know, I think part of the problem is coffee's such a strong flavor that it really dominates everything else. I can't get around the coffee flavor. And I don't dislike this beer, but if they left half those things off the label, I wouldn't say, like, whoa, how come they never tell us about that? I don't taste it. I can't get it.
So what is an imperial? Like, what is imperial as a thing? Because I don't even know what that is.
Oh, well... So, as far as I understand, the first imperial beers were imperial stouts, or Russian imperial stouts. So these are beers brewed by British brewers to ship over to the Russian court in the 19th century. These beers had to be stronger, hardier things because they're unrefrigerated, sitting in a barrel on a boat or ship for months and then going through that sort of process. So it had to be something that was hardier and could stand up to that kind of treatment. So they made bigger beers. And in those times, well, they didn't really have the ability to make a stronger beer that wouldn't be darker. So they ended up being these big stouts. I don't know if they could make a double IPA back then for whatever reason. They just tended to make big stouts. Or maybe that's just what they liked. I don't know. I'm not sure now that I think about it. But anyway, they made these big stouts that they'd be like 8, 9% alcohol. Much bigger than the stouts people drank at the time, which are like 4 or 5% alcohol. You know, the Imperial, obviously, because of, you know, the Tsar or whatever. And the term Imperial now has just kind of been used by brewers to mean whenever you make a type of beer and it's stronger than it normally should be. So a stout is between 5 and 7% alcohol. If you make a stout, you know, it has all the same kind of characteristics, the same kind of balance of bitterness and sweetness, the same kind of color, the same kind of flavor profile, but it's 10% alcohol, you call it an Imperial Stout. Or you make an IPA, and it's, you know, still an IPA, it's still very hoppy and bitter, and it's still pale in color, but it's now 9% alcohol. Well, it's an Imperial IPA. And I've actually seen things an Imperial Red Ale, an Imperial Pilsner even, an Imperial Brown Ale. Like, they just kind of put it in front of things. It just kind of is like a beer multiplier, which is probably the one thing we don't need for us right now. But Worldwide Stout, certainly an Imperial Stout. Stone Unpronounceable Cavesa is they call it an Imperial Stout. And I must speak personally as a guy, I like big beers. I like beers that leave an impact. I'm always interested in something that says Imperial. They totally know how to manipulate me. I understand. I know what's happening. But I'm willing to go for that ride. Because I want a beer that I'm going to think, whoa, that was different. And the more beers you have, the more difficult it is for something to stand out. Mm-hmm. So that's why you need the beers that are, the heroine of beers. They got to be just extreme. This is what they're doing here. It's made with every fucking ingredient in Mexico. And it's strong.
There's no avocado.
That's the one thing they left out. That and a balloon full of heroin in my asshole. it's intense. I don't know if I'd ever seek this out again, honestly. I've tried it. It's interesting. Mm-hmm. I would not be able to drink a lot of this in a day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people say that about beers. I don't know if that's really a compliment to the beer or an insult to the beer or a statement on your own terrible life situation. if you're like, I don't know if I could drink a lot of that.
I'm looking for a beer where I can drink 8.
Yeah, like that's
my beer.
That says more about you than the beer. Some brewers are like, yeah, I'm glad, because if you drank 8 of these, you would die. You shouldn't do that, sir. Like, if I drank 8 Worldwide Stouts, aside from spending $80 on beer, I would probably, I'd certainly be throwing up something awful. Mm-hmm. If not, straight up dead. I've had 2 and regretted it for the next day. 8? Holy shit, I can't even imagine it. All right, so we're talking about Imperials because that's the thing in the book. And it's the book within the book. It feels like a fucking Seinfeld episode. We keep saying that.
A little bit.
It's written by a Dutch guy named Van Houten? Van Houten?
Houten, I think.
I think it's Houten, right? Yeah. Who is a recluse. He wrote the book and then never...
Well, you don't know that at first.
That's true.
So, okay, here's what happens. So, Hazel meets Augustus. They like have a little thing, but they flirt with each other, but, you know, all this stuff happens. And Hazel wants to know what happens after the end of the book. Because in the book, An Imperial Affliction, the main character dies, so the book ends. And she wants to know what happens to the other characters, the mom, the post guy, the other character, Sisyphus the hamster. She wants to know.
I feel like we just said this.
We did just say that, yeah. I'm repeating myself. So she wants to know what happens to the end of the characters. She writes emails to the author. What happens at the end? I have cancer. I promise I won't tell anyone. Actually, she doesn't say that, but, you know, that's kind of implied.
That's what the people who the Dark Tower.
Yeah, Death the Dark Rogue Tower said. People. So she wants to know, and she gets a bunch of emails back, actually from his, like, assistant, who says some really nice things about them. And so anyway, Hazel and Augustus, they have this thing going on, and Augustus, because he hasn't used his wish, like Make a Wish Foundation type of thing. Although he gives it a different name in the book, but that's basically what it is. The Make a Wish Foundation. He's never used his wish, so after he knows that Hazel loves this book, and he reads it too, and he loves it.
Wait, they both read each other's favorite books.
They're both reading each other's favorite, but his favorite book is some like zombie apocalypse.
It's like a dude book.
Yeah, it's totally a dude book. It's for sure. So he says, "I'm going to use my wish on flying us both to Amsterdam to meet the author of this book." So that's like a big thing part of this. And then at first she has to go back to the doctor, and she's really sick and she's in the hospital, and then her doctors are saying, you know, well, you might be too sick to get on that airplane, but you know what, it's your life, go ahead, do it. And then there's a little bit of foreshadowing, he's pretty sick too, but they decide to go on the trip to Amsterdam to meet Peter Van Houten, the author of Imperial Affliction. And they get there and they meet him, and he's the biggest fucking asshole in the universe.
He's like an abusive alcoholic.
Yeah, so this they arrive at all at like 9 a.m.
Yeah.
8 a.m., 9 a.m. Amsterdam time, and they come in. He sits down to talk to them, and he's like, oh, make me a drink. You know, and he has one glass of scotch, and then he has another glass of scotch, and then he has another glass of scotch, and then he says, like, really insulting things to these two 16-year-olds with cancer.
He's insulting their cancer and like their disease, and he's like, you don't know what it's, you know,
understand. And they ask him, and she asks, what happens to these characters? And he says, oh, well, the hamster dies, but then refuses to talk about the other characters, the mother, the father, the whatever. And he's a total jerk.
Yeah, now, he does say something valid and important that 16-year-olds probably can't understand. The book ended, because it's over, I made that shit up. Yeah. I didn't make any more shit up. I stopped making it up. The book's over. Like, imagine if you really love a book, you want to know more. Like, you're invested in the characters. You want to be in that world. You want to know those characters more. But you can't. Just picture any book you've read. And then, you know, and imagine if the author spent one more fucking minute thinking about what the characters were going to do, and then they decided, yeah, but I'm not going to write that. That's not going to go in the book.
You know, he says the book ends, the novel ends where the novel is supposed to end. Period. Even though the book doesn't say what happens to these other characters.
But not every book ties up every end. Mm-hmm. And that's tough to accept, but that's the fucking way it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, look at what we just fucking did last week, Harry Potter. How many people clamor for more Harry Potter? They can't just accept that Harry Potter's over.
Look at the fan fiction forums, and you'll see.
I mean, I've been looking at the ones with the sex stuff in it, and that's different. I understand that it's a little more niche. That's only like 80% of it.
Only 80%.
It's like, oh, and then he put her in the position that must not be named. And he slithered into her chamber of secrets.
Oh my god, we should like cut this and put it in the other episode. All right, well, that happened.
But I'll try to think of more Harry Potter porn jokes.
I'm sure there are more.
Oh my god, that's the size? Well, I am half giant, Hagrid said.
Good. Speaking of giants, we have two more beers, so we should another one.
I know,
right
we now. Should. We should, okay.
I haven't finished this one yet, because it's also...
He didn't finish the first one.
I can handle both of them. Oh my god.
That's what she said. So let's go to the IPA. So I also picked this up today. At the same place I got everything but the Worldwide Stout, actually. This is a company I've never fucking heard of in a very kind of nondescript can. It is called Omnipollo Lustro. It's an Imperial IPA. Omnipollo is the company, and they are from Florida, and it is 8% alcohol. Let's see what...
So it's an Imperial IPA?
Imperial IPA. This is the only thing that's not a stout we're going to have today. The last beer is also a stout. I moved my shitty glass away. There you go, sir. Okay. So there's really no information on here other than Imperial India Pale Ale, alcohol 8% by volume. It tells you who makes it. It's actually not even made. This is like an on-contract kind of deal because Omnipollo is in Florida, but it's brewed and canned for Omnipollo by the Dorchester Brewing Company in Boston, Mass. Hmm. Not too uncommon to see with a lot of these small microbrews that they sometimes have to rent out or whatever. Bigger... facilities. You can see it's kind of unfiltered.
Yeah.
It's cloudy.
I mean, compared with these other beers, it's not... The flavor is just not as strong.
Oh, it's a totally different kind of flavor, yeah. Right? It's super bitter. It's extreme, you know, really bitter, and it smells very strongly of hops. It is a big IPA.
It is definitely hoppy. Just these other beers are just so strong that this doesn't even feel super strong to me.
I think it's
bitter. Even though compared to the other IPAs, like the, you know, some of the others we've had recently, a couple weeks ago, the Brooklyn Defender, this is like three Brooklyn Defenders together.
Yeah, well, if the Brooklyn Defender, you know, if this were the superhero, the Brooklyn Defender would be the dopey sidekick that gets trapped in the mine all the time. I find this extremely bitter, and I enjoy it. I'm not saying that negatively. Like, I feel like bitterness on the roof of my mouth. It is potent.
If you like strong IPAs, this is really good.
It's nice, and it, you know what I gotta say, it does not taste that strong alcohol wise.
No.
You know, when we drink things like, think of like, you know, your standard IPA, that's in the 6%, 5% alcohol range. You don't taste the booze in that just as much as you don't taste the booze in this. Or let me phrase it like a human. You don't taste the booze in this just like you don't taste the booze in that. Like, they're just, this doesn't taste like a strong beer to me. I mean, it tastes strong in the flavor quality, but alcohol-wise, no, it's dangerous, man. This would hurt me because I could pound this back. In fact, I will, but it will be, it will leave an impact. You know, I just wish I had the better fucking palate and sense of smell that I could tell you what hops and, you know, what kind of things I'm smelling. Because, I mean, there are people who could do that. I wish I knew more so I could tell you more about this beer. You know, because there's such a wide range. But saying hoppy is not enough, you know? Because hoppy, with air quotes, could mean so many different things. It could mean it smells like fucking
grapefruit. Mike definitely did the, like, four fingers air quotes when he said that.
I don't lie. I don't lie to you. Except maybe about the amount of times I masturbate. I might have embellished that. Or I rounded down. I mean, what does hoppy mean? We have a sense. It means like bitter and you know, whatever you associate with that. But hop flavors can taste like pine, or they could taste like grapefruit, or they could taste like kind of earthy, almost like dirt flavor, depending on what hops you're using. I regret that I can't tell you more. But there's like a, like, you know, like the sommelier, whatever, the master somm test, you know, that thing that nobody passes to become a fucking bona fide
wine
maven. Yeah, there's an equivalent for beer. I don't even know how to say it, like Cicerone. It's like 10 people have done it, you know, and nobody's done it. And they have to, you know all this shit about pairing beer with foods and identifying flavors and off flavors and styles. I wish I knew some of that shit. I don't need to be like the guy who has like wears a special lapel pin so you know, mm-hmm. Oh, look at that man. He is a wine expert or a beer expert. But I really wish I could tell you more about the hops here because they're pretty potent. It is an intense hop flavor. I enjoy it. I like it a lot. I might pick up some more of this, the Lustro, which sounds like my pornographic superhero alter ego. So they go find the Manhattan guy. He sucks balls.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Augustus didn't totally waste his wish because someone else might have sucked some balls. And he loses something besides his leg on this trip.
Exactly. So one thing he's talked about before they went on this trip was like, you know, guys with one leg definitely don't get laid. But on this trip, he definitely, after they visit the Anne Frank house, you know, the romantic setting of Anne Frank.
The Frank house.
The Anne Frank house. They finally go back to the hotel in bone. So he finally gets laid before he dies.
The Holocaust
just like
is,
Oscar Wow.
That's, oh,
just
whoa.
Just like Oscar Wow, finally gets laid before he dies.
The Holocaust is nature's strongest aphrodisiac. That's just science. He's like, oh, yeah, misery and genocide. Honey, quick, it's up. And brace yourself. It's coming.
Yeah. So,
I have to hide something in your attic.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Oh, no. I
this is a book about cancer. I just want to make that clear.
Oh, let me sneak in through the back door. Oh, you gassed it. Oh, God.
You can't. So, anyway, what were we talking about?
You'll be writing about this in your diary.
Inside joke.
And Frank kept a semi-famous diary.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. So, anyway, so... what do we want to talk about next?
Talking about I was talking about it when he loses his virginity.
Yeah. Okay. So that happens, and that connects to so, and then so here's the thing, he just before he went on this trip, so Augustus, he's the dude, he found out just before he went on the trip, he found out that his cancer was back. So here's one of the, like, you know, spoiler alert, one of the sort of, like, twists of this novel is that it's not Hazel that dies. It's Augustus that dies.
Right, the
instead.
Whole time you think it's going to be.
The whole time, because it's told from her perspective, and yes, I have cancer, I'm dying of it, and this is all the stuff about it, but she feels like, what am I going to do to the people around me when I die? But instead, he's the one that dies. So his cancer comes back, and he dies within weeks.
Yeah, so he dies really quickly, and you know what? When I fucking read this book, somebody ruined that for me.
Really?
Yeah. And you know what I want to have happen to them? Can you guess?
I can guess. I can guess what you wanted.
They're like, oh, you're reading that book? You know, Augustus dies, right? You fucking godless bitch. Oh, man. If you think you know what I wished on them, tweet us. At DrunkGuysBC.
Wait, is this someone we know?
No. No, what do we know? But that wouldn't stop me. And if I had the power to wish that on somebody, I would do it with abandon.
I'd do it on that person.
I would do it to anybody who wronged me. It'd be down to, like, you cut me in line at the supermarket. Yeah, cancer. But so he dies, and you're like, holy fucking shit.
Like, the final third of the book, it's really maybe a quarter to a third, is Augustus dying of cancer and Hazel having to deal with all the things around him dying of cancer. And she feels terrible, and she's going to visit him at his house, and his whole family is there, and they're all, like, completely a mess.
As you wouldn't expect.
Yeah, as you know, as would happen. And it's so fucking sad.
And they have the mock funeral.
Yeah. So Augustus's final good day is that he calls Hazel in the morning and says, I need you to write me a eulogy. Meet me at the church at 8 p.m. or whatever it is. And then they have to, like, read the eulogies. So she reads the eulogy she wrote, and then another friend reads another eulogy.
The blind guy, right?
Yeah, the blind kid. Another kid, because they have a third friend who had cancer in his eyes, and so he had to have his eyes removed, so he's blind for the rest of his life. He's not going to die, but he's blind. Also really bad.
Yeah, he has to fuck fat girls now.
You didn't just say that.
If you cut that, I'll kill you. That's a good joke.
So they read their eulogies for each other. Hazel reads a eulogy for Augustus, and it's really, really sad. And then he gets even worse and even worse, and then he dies. And then she has to go through his funeral, and then she's, of course, at the same time thinking about what the same thing is going to do to her parents when she dies, because she's going to die, because she has cancer. And then, randomly, at the funeral, Peter Van Houten is in the back seat of her car. Like, he flew all the way from Amsterdam to wherever they live, in Indianapolis, and then showed up in the back of their car just to provide more words of wisdom while being completely drunk, like we are.
If you couldn't tell, we still have one more beer to open up, too.
We do have another beer. Oh, boy. Okay.
So,
yeah, no, so it's really, really sad, and she is saying, like, why don't you just fucking write another book or shut the fuck up? At this point, because she had such a bad experience with him in the first place, she has no patience for him anymore, and he definitely feels guilty about it, and then Hazel realizes, oh, you had a child who died of cancer, too. That's why you're acting like this.
That's why you're an alcoholic, perhaps.
That's why you're, you know... Although, he says in the book, oh, I was insufferable long before that. So he was always a little bit.
Well, he might have been obnoxious, but
he got pushed
from, you know, 4 to 11. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, but he kind of redeems himself in a way, right? He tells her...
He has some wise words.
Yeah, he has some wise words. Before we get to any other wise words, let's get to this last beer.
Another beer, yeah.
This is interesting to me for many reasons. This is a beer from Ireland. It is by the Onward Brewing Project. Still have another fat girl joke on.
Keep going.
It doesn't have an exciting name. It just says it is brewed in, I can't pronounce your fucking words, Ireland. Sligo, Ireland. The Lowhill Brewery, I guess. It is an Imperial Toasted Coconut Porter.
Okay.
So it's 10% alcohol, and I like the can art because there's, like, a big fat guy just drinking a beer, and, like, I can't imagine what that's like. So I don't know what that's about. It's 10% alcohol. What I also find very interesting about this is that the can is 14.9 fluid ounces. That is a really random thing. Now, that is not a round number in metric. I don't understand why it's 14.9 fluid ounces. Alas. This is the last thing I picked up today at the beer shop, which is the name of the store. It's called The Beer Shop. It's a nice sort of, not black, very, very dark brown color.
Mm-hmm.
It has a nice tan head on there. Very, very frothy looking head. I like it. What do you think?
Hmm. So it's dark and it's a stout, but it's not so incredibly strong as the other two we had before.
Though this is actually more alcohol than the Stone.
Really?
Stone was 8.1. This is 10.
This one has twice the spices, though.
Yeah. It's kind of almost distracting from the other stuff. I like this, though, you know, you hint at an interesting kind of quandary in the beer world. What's the difference between a stout and a porter?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have spoken to professional brewers who have told me there is no difference. And historically, there really isn't, because stout was originally, is short for stout porter. Which were just, you know, porters were shitty beers that porters of England drank. You know, like kind of like rough, stronger, dark beers they drank. And a stout porter was maybe a little stronger one. You will find that brewers use these terms virtually interchangeably. Now, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I really cannot tell you the difference between a stout and a porter. They're dark-colored beers that have more malt than hop and tend to be higher in alcohol. And now we've seen an Imperial Stout and an Imperial Porter. The Imperial Stout we looked at today, we looked at two. One was like spicy and had all sorts of other adjuncts in it. But really, is there a significant difference between this and the Worldwide Stout from Dogfish Head? Just strength.
Yeah.
But if that was made at a weaker level, you could see how they're the same family. I mean, they're really not different as far as I can tell. It's just more beer marketing malarkey. And I'm not just saying malarkey because it's an Irish beer. I'm craving potatoes because it's an Irish beer. But I like this. I don't get a lot of coconut from it, though, I have to say.
No, me neither. Not compared to other stuff.
Right. Yeah, there's some other coconut beers out there. Coconut's a weird ingredient in beer. Some coconut beers have it really strong, and you can smell it, and you don't taste it. Some you can taste it, you don't really smell it so much. And a lot, it's listed, and you don't even detect it. It's kind of like the same issue we had a while back with the pumpkins. You know, it's like, they tell me there's pumpkin here. Where it is, I cannot tell you. I don't know. So, going back to the book, there's a couple issues I have with the book. I really enjoyed it. I have to say, I really enjoyed reading it. But the problem I have with the book is a problem I have with a lot of things that have teenage main characters. They're too fucking clever.
Mm-hmm.
They always have a smart response instantly. And it's not just, you know, appropriate. It's also witty. And, you know, it ricochets back and forth. And they have all these things to say.
All the dialogue in this book is so witty and so clever, which is one thing that makes it a good book. This is not a criticism exactly. But here's the thing. Teenagers don't speak like that.
No.
They really don't. But it's not just teenagers that don't speak like that. No one speaks like that because no one is really smart enough to have those type of really smart, really witty responses all the time.
Except for yours truly here at the Drunk Guys Book Club.
Clearly, yeah. Mm-hmm, for sure.
We have our moments.
So the dialogue in this book reminded me a lot of The West Wing. Because the dialogue in The West Wing is very much the same sort of everything's really fast and really smart and really witty. But it's not actually realistic. The things about The West Wing is these are adults, and this book is, of course, teenagers. Teenagers, I mean, of course, some teenagers are very, very smart. Plenty of teenagers are very, very smart. But no one speaks like that.
Consistently, at least.
Consistently, no.
Sometimes you get a good moment. You get a good day. You get some good shit together.
Get a good little quip in there.
Yeah.
When the moment strikes you.
But nobody speaks like that all the time. It reminds me, because I don't watch liberal porn, it reminds me of Juno. You remember that movie from like a decade ago?
I did see it, but
and the characters, they're all high school students, and they're constantly saying clever shit to each other, referencing things that high school students should not know about in 2007 or whatever that movie came out. That, I mean, there's like one part in Juno where the girl's like, oh, that kid's house or whoever the fuck it is always smells like soup, right? And then a moment later, they reference the mom or the person, I forget which, as Soupy Sales. There's no fucking way that a high school student in 2007 knew who Soupy Sales was. It's like a fucking...
I don't know who that is.
Soupy Sales was this person about. From like the 60s and 70s. Who was on like a children's TV show. I only know because I had to look it up at some point. Or like my dad mentioned Soupy Sales. I was like, Dad, who the fuck is Soupy Sales besides potential pederast? Like that is not a name I would know. Or like the America's Choice version of the Soup Nazi. Oh, come to Soupy Sales. Some bread for you? they reference these things. And even in the most dire circumstances, like in Juno, when the girl's going into labor, she can't just say, Mom, Dad, help, or oh, we call the ambulance. She has to say something clever. And in the movie Juno, she says, Thundercats are go, when she her water breaks. Fuck you. That doesn't happen. That's stupid. Mm-hmm. I watched that when I was like 20 years old when that movie came out. And I'm like, yeah, that's a bridge too far for me. When everybody's calling each other like home skillet and saying all clever things, I'll buy it. But at a certain point, it pushes past believable. Mm-hmm. And this is probably true of just about every movie and TV show and book. If you took the last year of your life and you took every really good joke you made, every good, you know, response, mm-hmm. you might boil that down to
5 minutes of really good material.
Like, yeah, we all have our moments, but we don't have it consistently. And we'd suspend that disbelief for a little while in books and whatever, and allow characters to be much cleverer than the average human is. But when it's 100% of the time, you kind of have to...
It's a little too much.
It's a little too much. And, you know, like, for the thing that...
Still, it's a book. It's not... you have to suspend disbelief a little bit. And the book is more entertaining because the dialogue is so witty and so clever.
Well, I guess it's a balance that's difficult, if not impossible, to strike. Mm-hmm. Right? You want it to be interesting, but you want it to be semi-realistic, right? He's writing about very heavy topics. Even though he's using a fictional book and fictional characters, he wants you to think about real things.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
So to have them speak entirely like fake people would be disappointing, to say the least. You know, one example of, you know, unbelievable cleverness is when they first meet Augustus. He pulls out a cigarette to start smoking, and, mm-hmm. and Hazel is aghast. You know, how dare you? I have fucking lung cancer, you prick. Mm-hmm. And do you remember what his response is? He's like, oh.
You know, I don't light it.
Yeah, I just put the cigarette there because I control it, the thing that could kill me.
I'm in control. I have power over the thing that could kill me.
Which is, one, untrue, and two, stupid. But it's untrue, and it's just, that's a level of thinking about something that most people would not get to. Now, maybe if I were terminally ill, I would try to come up with something like that. I can't say. Fortunately, I've never been in that situation. But that struck me as a little too precious, a little too, you know, not real. And then at the very end of the book, one of the kind of like the moral is that Augustus said, you know, like, I'm totally paraphrasing this, but like, we get hurt, but we could choose what gets to hurt us. Hmm. And he chose to let Hazel hurt him, sort of like in the mm-hmm. the tragedy of their romance, like The Fault in Our Stars, right? The title is a reference to Romeo and Juliet, right?
It's actually a reference to Romeo and Juliet, the star-crossed lovers. It's also a reference to Julius Caesar, where Cassius says to Brutus, "The fault is not in our stars, dear Brutus; it's in ourselves." Mm. That's where the quote really comes from.
Right, but
he also references Romeo and Juliet.
So. Well, I mean, we can get to the title in a second, because I forgot about that element of it. But we don't get to choose what hurts us.
True.
That's horse shit. That's the mm-hmm. sort of thing you say to an upset child. And it's like, you don't have to listen to them. You don't have to let it bother you, little Jimmy. No, things hurt you. They hurt you. Like, you don't get to say, that doesn't hurt me, emotionally. Mm-hmm. That's like postcardy chicken soup for the soul kind of advice. You don't get to choose what hurts you. That's bullshit. And I'm not speaking physically. Like, you don't get to choose. I don't get bruised. Like, emotionally, things hurt you whether you want them to or not. I just thought that was untrue. And I thought it was really touching how Augustus says, you know, I'm glad I chose you, or something like that, is what he says to Hazel. But it's untrue. I just don't buy it. I don't know. Maybe I'm missing something.
I don't know.
I just felt that's bullshit. Like, you get hurt by things. People get hurt. Like, unless you're, like, a dad from the 1950s or a 1980s movie where you're just impervious to human emotion. You don't get to choose that. And for such I guess if I were, you know, I read this book and I was like 28, 29 years old the first time. If I read this when I was 13 or 14, I might have felt very differently about it. I felt, as an adult, it's a little simplistic at points. But it's not necessarily meant for me, so I guess
it is a young adult book.
Exactly.
John Green writes specifically for the young adult audience. And it is definitely different because, unlike most of the other young adult books you've ever heard of, it's not dystopian, and it's not about vampires. It definitely makes it unique, or at least from the young adult books I've read. It definitely makes it unique in that situation.
No, you're right. It is a rare kind of thing that's not about dystopian vampire civilizations or boy wizards. It is a totally different thing. It's like a realistic kind of book. Mm-hmm. And most YA fiction is kind of sci-fi-ish mm-hmm. or historical fiction. This takes place in the present day, totally real. There's nothing supernatural. It's very real. It's very real and depressing. You know, maybe that's good for kids to learn a little empathy or something like that from it, too. I don't know. Kids will probably respond very strongly to this, I imagine, if they're not pricks. Kids, people dying that are around their age, that's got to, I mean, that's visceral.
You know, teenagers are at the point where they definitely have all the mental capacity and emotions of an adult, but they don't really know how to apply it. And having a book that deals with such incredibly sad situations has to make you think, because when I read it, like just this past week, when I read it, I couldn't help but think two different things. Number one, how would I handle this situation if I was them? And if I was the parent, how would I handle this situation? Like, what would I feel? What would I do? What would all these kinds of things? And both of which are incredibly, incredibly sad and incredibly difficult, but you know what? That's what teaches empathy.
Well, it's certainly empathy. You don't have any children that I know of, or that
I
you know
not
of.
No, nope, that I know of, yeah, for sure.
So for you to imagine what it feels like to be the parent, that is a bit of a stretch, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, not that much of a stretch.
I don't know. You know, every person I know who has kids are like, oh, everything changes when you have children. Now, they're probably right, and they might be referring to the amount of day drinking you can do. I don't know, and that will change a lot for me.
Or you need to do.
That's like a vicious cycle. It's like a gift of the magi. You can't do all the drinking, but you need to do more drinking. It changes just the way you prioritize the world. I don't have kids. I can't. I can only speculate, but you could kind of imagine, right? Mm-hmm. You're like, you're growing up, and you're like, oh, that must be fuck. You picture your parents, you know, mm-hmm. or I picture just parents that were okay, and then they think of, you know, well, my parents, how would they react to this, and how awful that would be. It might be hard to do that when you're like 14, 15 years old.
Yeah,
because when you're 14, 15 years old, the world's like, you're the center of the fucking universe still,
mm-hmm.
and nobody knows. I mean, we've made fun of teenagers in the past, and we will again, because they suck. And they shouldn't be listening to this, unless they're going to give us 5 stars. don't drink along, though, unless you're over 21. Or 18 in some countries. You know, I just thought about the fucking hamster. His name's Sisyphus, right?
Sisyphus. That is a really important thing.
How so?
So, the Greek myth of Sisyphus. And Sisyphus has a very specific story, where Sisyphus, because of some shitty thing he did, or it's punishment by Zeus, has to, the thing he has to do. He has to roll a boulder up a hill, all the way to the top, just to see it roll all the way back down, and then do it again.
Was he a god? I don't think he was a god.
Well, he was one of the lesser gods.
I think he was a king who did some, like, who committed hubris.
Hubris was his sin?
Yeah. But hubris is thinking you're equal to the gods. Like, he was like a, you know, tried to boast mm-hmm. or whatever. And so the punishment was like, all right, you're such a big man, get this boulder to the top of the hill, and it will never get there. Because you're not a god. Suck a bag. You know, so, now, why is it important? Now, it's extremely specific to name the hamster Sisyphus. Now, it seems cool. Like, if I was a middle school student or a high school student, I might think, oh, I know who Sisyphus is, or I'd find out who Sisyphus was, or whatever. I am in the know. But I think it actually says something about the story. Because, I mean, maybe it's like an Easter egg kind of thing. The things that Van Houten is saying, like, the novel ends when the novel ends. The hamster, Sisyphus, whatever. You can keep trying to find out what happens to those characters, or you can keep working at it, but you never get there.
Hmm.
Right? Like, the book's over. You can kind of speculate and push and whatever. You never get that solution. And that's what I kind of took from that. Or John Green just thought it was really cool to name the hamster Sisyphus, which is the kind of thing some fucking... classics major Herb would do in college with their fucking hamster. This is my hamster Sisyphus. Him and Melchior, my gerbil, we hang out and we read Suetonius in the original Latin. I don't know.
Thing is, I can totally picture a hamster pushing a boulder up a hill.
Well, what?
Because hamsters are fucking relentless. They do not give up. Hamsters will fucking... like, attempt to escape every moment of their waking lives until they die. Well, so I can imagine a hamster doing that.
Well, what is the classic hamster toy? They're put in the wheel that never ends.
That is true, yeah.
So, I mean, it might be some combination of all of these things. Like, they're fucking stupid. And they, sooner or later, I'm going to get to the end of this wheel, and it's going to be worth it.
Spoiler, it won't.
It won't. You're going to die.
Back to your cage. That's
hamster AIDS. whatever hamsters die from being more than 8 weeks old. Geriatric hamsters. So the book, fucking emotionally draining book for, yeah. I didn't read it as a young person. I don't know how I would have reacted as a young person. As a grown up, I think I reacted more strongly as a grown up than I would have as me personally, as a young person.
Well, that's what grown ups usually do.
Lame. Mm-hmm. Just like, think of the children.
But you can't avoid it.
That's true. Well, it's driven us to drink. What do you think of our imperial selection today? What's your take on the imperial beer world?
You know, just because I mostly like IPAs better, I really like the IPA.
It stood out just because it was different.
Because it was different, and I really like IPAs. These stouts are just like oppressive. Well, they're really strong.
The worldwide stout in particular fucks you up.
Mm-hmm.
I gotta say, I'm drinking everything. Like, I waste no part of the buffalo. I make everything gets put into my liver. The stone, I'm gonna assume it's like a show sound, like chocolate and cerveza is what I'm assuming they're doing here in this name. So like the Chocovesa.
It's the mole of beers.
The mole of beers. Kind of, yeah.
Okay.
But then with a whole bunch of other shit added into it, that it's kind of hard to taste what's happening. It's a little too busy. I love their enthusiasm. It was just a bit much for me. Whereas, on the other hand, the Onward Brewing Project Imperial Toasted Coconut Porter, I didn't really get the flavor of toasted coconut.
You know, we drank the other porters, their stouts, first, that were so much stronger that one, in comparison, just doesn't taste like much.
Right. Stronger in terms of, like, flavor profile, right?
Flavor profile and alcohol.
Well, this is the second strongest. It's 10%.
Okay, well, we started with a really strong one,
yeah.
Which I'm not going to drink.
It hurt us. It's going to hurt more later.
Mm-hmm.
I think they were all great. I have to say my least favorite was the stone, just because it was kind of like, I don't really know what I'm supposed to get out of this.
Interesting sounding.
Yeah.
But, you know, underwhelming.
And also, I guess the Imperial Toasted Coconut Porter was disappointing, too. Just because I didn't get coconut. We're going to find, I have a beer saving for a special day that legitimately tastes like coconut.
Definitely.
And it will hurt us. This just didn't live up to that kind of level. Coconut's just an ingredient that just doesn't agree with beer. And the Worldwide Stout was just so fucking strong that I'm going to regret it. I'm going to regret that. So maybe the IPA is the best, just because the IPA is the most kind of like palatable, that you could pound a few of them down and not die. So it tells you something about imperial beers, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like a big alcoholic dick showing match. You know, like, yeah, I drank this beer. It's really strong. Too many of them is bad for you. And many of them are not very good.
Mm-hmm.
They're just like steroids injected beers. But don't worry. Don't fear beer world. I'll continue to drink them.
All right. Well, tell us what you thought. Send us an email to drunkguysbookclub@gmail.com and
follow us on Twitter @drunkguysbc, as in book club.
Next week, we will read The Alchemist.
Oh boy. Brace yourselves, and we'll see you then.